This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kanison. It is 7:07 in the morning, Thursday the 7th of November. Ooh, lots of sevens in that sentence. And overnight, the US markets closed mixed. So the Dow was unchanged, the S&P 500 up 0.1% and the Nasdaq down, sadly, 0.3%.
And this was on the back of news that the US-China meeting and potential partial deal will only materialize in December. So if we look closer to home in Asia, the Nikkei 225 closed 0.2%, Shanghai Composite closed down 0.4%, Hang Seng was unchanged, Kospi closed up 0.1%, Singapore Straits Times closed up 0.4%, and the KLCI was down 0.2%.
I was hoping that on that streak of ups, that was going to end on an up, but
sadly no.
Not.
So to give us a little bit of insight into global markets this morning, we have on the line with us Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank. Thank you for joining us, Vishnu. Now, progress towards a US-China Phase 1 trade deal appears to be slowing, with Asian markets seeming to struggle for direction after powering ahead on some of the earlier hopes for a deal. So what is your expectation in the near term? And even if there is a deal, do you suspect that a lot of the upside has already been priced in?
I think you framed it very well right there. I mean, the thing about the deal, the interim deal, and I think we can condense it or decompose it down into two things. One is exactly what the phase one deal will entail. So I think we're at the juncture where some of the news, dripping through into the wires is suggesting that China's bar for the deal is a little bit higher. They want a rollback of tariffs. So I think markets are getting a little bit more circumspect on exactly in which form and how much of this the U.S. can deliver. The second aspect of it is what then? Where do we go from there? Would we get a second phase of the deal? And that bar is a lot higher. So you're right in saying that I think markets are maybe slightly disappointed on the timing, but they are probably, and they should be, probably more worried about the details. And certainly a lot of the upside is priced in because the low-hanging fruits will come through in phase one. It's much more difficult to advance it further.
Yeah, Vishnu, it always seems like it's one step back and then we take another step. We take a step forward and take a step back. But speaking of China, the People's Bank of China has cut the interest rate, interest loan rate for the first time in 3 years to prop up a slowing economy. Is this a signal that the central bank may restart monetary easing or just a one-off move?
I like the way you framed that because at the end of the day, I think most people, myself included, we continue to be confused by China's monetary policy because they use many tools. But the overall signal we've been getting over the last 2 years is that there has been incremental easing and very targeted loosening of policy going on. So we don't think this is a one-off. It will continue. But the main thing we want to bear in mind is as much as they want to stimulate the economy, they also want to keep credit risks and banking risks in check, which is why we'll get a drip feed of very, very calibrated moves rather than the big gun type.
And Vishnu, the Bank of Thailand cut its benchmark interest rate for the second time in 3 months to match a record low of 1.25%. And this is on the back of the strength of the baht, which is probably one of the best performing Asian currencies. So do you anticipate any further moves from them in 2019 and even 2020?
I think, as guesses go, 2019, they're probably done because we admit that there was some weakening in the data coming through, but with a prospective trade deal in place, the BOT wouldn't want to be seen as overly aggressive on rate cuts. And especially because they complimented by saying that they will take macroprudential measures to stem the strength of the baht. I think they're going to rely on this. So that gives them maybe a 3 to 6 month window to watch both the baht and economic conditions before they decide what to do next.
And over in Japan, so the services sector activity has declined for the first time in over 3 years in October. This comes according to Jibun Bank Services PMI, which fell from 49.7 to 52.8. This comes as Japan weathered a sales tax as well as a typhoon which hit Tokyo and its surrounding areas. Is this more reason to be concerned about the weakness in Japan, or is there still some reason to be positive here?
I mean, certainly it was one reason to watch the space very closely with a little bit more concern. As you pointed out, that the confluence of factors makes this very complex because there was a VAT hike, yet reports on the ground said that a lot of in-store discounts offset that. and then there's a typhoon, and then there's also the question of whether external sector weakness, the exports weakness, is seeping through to the domestic economy. There is no clarity on this because we can't get into the heads of consumers, but certainly we want to watch this space very closely, especially after the building boom for Olympics 2020 fades, to see what the underlying momentum is.
Thank you very much, Vishnu. And that was Vishnu Varathan of Mizuho Bank, giving us his thoughts about Japan as well as the Bank of Thailand and what's happening in the US-China trade front. But also in some international headlines this morning, SoftBank earnings are out and the company just reported its first quarterly loss in 14 years. So its loss amounted to about $6.5 billion, surpassing analysts' expectations. In comparison, the company made $6.5 billion in profit a year earlier.
So a mirror image in terms of earnings right there. Now, this all comes from the Signature Vision Fund, right? It reported a $9 billion loss in the quarter and primarily coming from WeWork, right down to WeWork and Uber, and sure, a bunch of other companies as well. The biggest thing here is that Mayushi Shan has acknowledged that it was his error here.
Yeah, a problem with his judgment,
with his
right?
judgment. And when it's a judgment that costs a few billion dollars, shouldn't there be some amount of accountability there? If I was an investor in the Vision Fund, I would be upset to say the least.
Well, when you think about it, you're a $100 billion fund. You're the largest tech fund out there. And occasionally you do make mistakes. And, you know, he's brought it so far. So I think the market is probably going to be prepared to give him some slack, cut him some slack at this current juncture. But the problem is, how much more slack is he going to get? How much more indulgence is he going to get? And, you know, I think if there's going to be more spectacular losses, then it'll be difficult for him. Because bear this in mind, this is Vision Fund 1. He plans to do a Vision Fund 2. We're interesting to see whether he can raise capital for the second fund.
And speaking about raising capital, right? For Vision Fund 1, they got money from Saudi Arabia, but that was a loan. So they're going to have to pay that money back. How is that? This is a venture cap fund that has taken equity and debt. So how are they going to fulfill that obligation to pay that debt down?
Which is why he keeps taking on increasing risks.
And so he's obviously, WeWork is obviously not the only black mark on his reputation at the moment, right? Because there also is Uber, which has been seeing a shrinking valuation. And Uber did also see its shares fall to an all-time low when its lockup period expired. So this means that early investors and employees were free to sell shares. And it comes shortly after they released their third quarter earnings on Monday, in which they reported, guess what did they report? Steep losses.
Yeah, the lockup is a way of curtailing the amount of supply in the market for a stock, right? For this particular stock. It's a way of making sure that the initial investors don't all dump the stock when the
it's when common
it
IPOs. Practice.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like we'll really see kind of, now that all the shares are floating, we'll see how the stock settles.
I mean, it's a normal practice even in Malaysia, right? So all the you know, major shareholders, they normally have a lockup for 6 months before they can sell. That's just a practice as it is. Usually you don't see such sharp selling, but maybe because I think, if I'm not wrong, Uber probably, you know, it's the ESOS coming onto the market. So it's all the employees basically cashing out or the major shareholders cashing out. Hey, you know, they work so hard, they want a bit of money on the table.
And not to mention, they've also gone through two rounds of layoffs. So there's been a lot of change in the company since they IPO'd.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how many people are actually going to sell now, considering that it's below IPO price. And even towards the end of that valuation, during the private valuation stages, they were pricing it quite high. I think SoftBank's last round was already much higher than the IPO price. They had valued the company over $80 billion.
But you see, if you're a fund manager, you think to yourself, okay, if the share price continues to go down, I might as well just cut my losses now, even if it's below water, because it's better that I lose less than lose a lot. That's the logic.
Yeah.
I think everyone is hoping to see that, see the ones who actually do hold on to their shares, they're hoping for that inflection point that you've mentioned before, Shaning. But it's just a question of, because right now it's you're just like looking into a crystal ball, right, to see when could Uber potentially actually make a profit, because they certainly don't know, not for the foreseeable future.
Oh, that's WeWork. They say 2021.
Yes. Both, I get confused by all of these unicorns who don't know when they're going to report
both
profit.
Both Lyft and Uber have said 2021, and we're going to see how that that does, because if they miss that target, then it's going to be even worse for them.
All right. And right now, though, we are heading into a few messages and then we'll be back to take a look at some local news for you. So be sure to stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.